This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Here on Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub. It is MGO Blog Roundtable time, and the crew is with us from MGOBlog.com. Is starting first with the guy who started it all at MGO Blog, our good friend Brian Cook, BC. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
That is good to hear. Seth Fisher, my guy, how are you doing this morning?
I was almost ready to kick myself for turning down Ira's tickets to the Tigers game last night when Cabby came up in the seventh inning after hitting three hits already. So trying to see if I can make it today, but I don't think it's going to happen. But 3,000 today, it's going to happen.
It is going to happen. I agree with you. Would be the seventh player in history, in baseball history, to have 3,000 hits and 500 home runs. And he is a Tiger doing that. So can't wait to see that. Of course, the venerable Craig Ross. How are you this morning, my guy?
Very venerable.
All right. So, Terrence Shannon, guys, let's stipulate that none of us know quite yet how they would make this work. None of us know quite yet about the admissions piece of this. So let's just assume, for the sake of your argument, that the whole squad is back and that they're able to maneuver a scholarship. And you're able to add him to the fold. How does he fit? What kind of fit is he for this Wolverine squad? Brian, starting with you.
Terrence Shannon. I don't think you actually mentioned his name.
Terrence Shannon. Sorry about that.
Right. He's Charles Matthews, except he can shoot a bit better. He's not a volume shooter, but he's at like 35-38% from three and deep. And he's a 6'6" wing who can guard twos. So his impact on this team is Charles Matthews with better outside shooting.
Seth?
Yeah. The only difference with Charles Matthews is that Matthews was good at bad shots, like that those short twos and whatnot. And Shannon is not really an inside guy. He's not an ISO guy, but he shoots. He's 97th percentile on spot ups according to Synergy. So I mean, that is definitely something that Michigan has lacked, other than a 6'6" wing defender, which is like something they really lacked. And you know, you play for Texas Tech, you know how to defend. So this guy can shoot a three, he can get his own threes off, he is a spacer, and you know, they're going into the season with Kobe Bufkin at their two, and their three is kind of Caleb Houston. So like, this is definitely a role that nobody else on the team could fill, and really someone that they really needed this past season too.
I mean, I'm skeptical personally that Diabate is going to come back because of NIL issues with foreign players, and he will get drafted if he goes. Like, I personally feel like he's going to go, and you're going to see Houston bump up to the four, and then you've got Shannon as a guard who can also play the three, and he's probably in line for 30 plus minutes.
Now, how did the Shribe thing work? How did the Oscar Shribe thing work out?
I think he's been in the country for longer, so it's easier for him to get a green card or a visa or whatever it was, because he's entering, I think, his fifth year in college, right? So I think they came over around the same time, at least at the same age, but it takes a little bit longer for these things to get in process and all that stuff. So I'm not entirely sure, but that's what I would assume is the difference.
So, Craig, Terrence Shannon.
Yeah, it's very good. He actually was 38.4% last year from three. He is a very good defender. As Brian says, he can guard two through four, and that works. So yeah, he's a really good fit. If you'd indulge me for a minute, I'd like to talk about the transfer portal generally. There was as of a month ago, there were 1,100 players, Division I players in the portal. And Brian mentioned that you can find a shooter in this portal. When you got 1,100 kids who are D1 kids, there's going to be somebody there available who will fit and work out for Michigan. And I think he was right about that. However, Tom Izzo the other day said that the transfer portal is really unfair to kids. And immediately thereafter, Julius Marble left their program and went into the portal. And I was trying to think, well, why does Izzo think it's unfair? First, he says kids should have to fight through adversity. And second, 90% of them aren't going to make the pros anyway. And I was thinking, well, maybe playing basketball in college isn't all about making the pros for everyone. Maybe kids just want to play because it's fun and get off the bench and maybe not even be abused by a narcissistic and unhinged Yahoo. I mean, that would be, you know, something. And
I wish I could have bet on that. I wish I could have bet that phrase was going to come out of Craig's mouth.
Yeah. And so, but then they asked, Mel Tucker was asked about Izzo's comments. And Mel, who built his team on the transfer portal, and it's hard to criticize him for that, certainly I'm not going to, said he had, quote, no comment. So you've got, you know, a complete Chico Escuela there with Mel Tucker saying that the transfer portal been very good to him and Izzo ranting that the transfer portal is very bad for kids. So I found that amusing at the very least. But in terms of Michigan, there is a rumor, and it's a profound rumor, at least on posting boards, which I'm embarrassed to say I sort of scan a lot. I know that Brian has long since given up on this, if he ever paid any attention. It's probably same for Seth. But there's a rumor on various Michigan posting boards that a guard is leaving Michigan. No one is saying who the guard is. No one is saying that whether Terrence Williams qualifies as a guard. It's hard to believe Frankie Collins would go. It's hard for me to believe Kobe would go, at this juncture. So I don't know, but these rumors are out there and, you know, and we don't know. It may be that Moose is going. I'm not so sure Moose is getting drafted.
Someone is going to draft him. Just his athleticism and general body shape will get him drafted.
Yeah. They might watch him catching the ball too. Which at this point he can't. And so I think he's got a huge ceiling. I'm with you on that. His ceiling is massive, but it isn't so clear to me. And so I don't know where Michigan's sitting with Terrence Shannon, aside from the fact that one, we don't know what credits are going to be taken. I think he's in his last year, isn't he? I think he's been 3 years at Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And so we don't know what credits are going to take, what the prognosis is there. Aside from we don't know that he's coming to Michigan, even aside from all of that, I know that he's in the top three or four, considered in the top three or four players nationally in the portal, along with Nigel Pack. And there's a point guard from SMU who I'm blocking on right now. But yeah, great fit if it can work out and we just don't know how that all works out at the moment.
Yeah, I think you give the lay of the land here pretty well, Craig, in that it's encouraging and exciting that he's visiting, but I think it's premature to think that everything has been determined when it comes, especially as it relates to admissions, because this is typically, you know, this is the kind of transfer that you automatically rule him out for, because he'll have so many credits that he'll wind up losing too many in transfer. And I'm not saying that's definitely the case here, but it has been a limiting factor in other transfer considerations. So How is that being navigated? Will he have to lose a bunch of credits in transfer? One of you guys asked before we came on, could he take classes here and have those credits transfer back to Texas Tech? That might be a workaround. And then you have the other piece of this is the scholarship maneuvering. You know, I know it had been a limiting factor. They technically did not have a scholarship to offer. So that being the case, are there other ways that you can come up with one? Might one of the Howards be able to become a walk-on? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is what my initial understanding was when Jace was being recruited, was because he was a signed player that he could not be put on scholarship that year. Is that a limitation that extends beyond that? I mean, what is your understanding of that rule? I actually have this question. I put this question out and waiting on a reply on it, but I'm curious if you guys have any understanding of that already.
So my understanding of this is there's a thing called a blue shirt that people were using in football where you come in and you're not on scholarship the first, I think, semester, and then they put you on scholarship the second semester.
Right.
And to do that, you couldn't have taken a visit. You couldn't have been, quote unquote, recruited. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, only applies for the first year. And then after that, you were able to be a walk-on. The most prominent case of this lately was Doug McDermott, who was not on scholarship at his final year at Creighton. So I think it's possible. I'm not entirely clear on the rules here because it's a very unusual situation.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure that if Michigan gets everybody back, which is still a pretty long shot in my opinion, that I think Jace Howard can spend a year not on scholarship.
They could do it with Jace, but they couldn't do it with Jet.
That's what I think. Yes.
Yeah, this is based off of like looking at the transfer or the recruiting rules back, like I think during the Brady Hoke era. So I mean, if there's been any changes in the rules, and we're talking about football as well, so it's, you know, that's where my knowledge of this comes from, at least. And I think that's the last time we spoke about it on the blog because who was it? It was that safety, the cornerback slash safety who got hurt his last game, blanking on his name, Clark. Remember, we gray-shirted him, or there was going to be a
Jeremy Clark.
There was going to be a scholarship situation with him, and they were not able to bring him on campus for an official visit because they're going to do this or whatever. That's the last time I even looked at this stuff. I just don't think we have, 8 months before the season starts that you're going to – I don't care. You can speculate all you want to about guards or boots or whatever. I don't think there's any way you get 8 months with the current roster intact. It just doesn't happen in college basketball with the transfer portal the way it is right now.
Yeah, and not to throw any gasoline on the flames that I think are emanating from Craig's talk of guards leaving.
But I'm just reporting the rumors.
I have no knowledge.
I'm
not throwing gasoline on those. I will say this. You do, as you have portal considerations, as decisions are made by the guys that are considering the draft, as those decisions are made, and if they decide to come back or you decide to bring someone else in, you wind up having to go back and recruit the other guys that are some of the other guys that are on the roster. That is just, that's not just a Michigan thing. That's everywhere. You got the guys that are on the roster asking, hey, why are you going to get another dude? Or if X is coming back, am I going to get more the additional minutes that I expected to get because I thought that guy was leaving? I think that those are definite questions that this staff will have to deal with guys on this roster.
Yeah, in terms of putting someone on walk-on status, I'm guessing, and it's just a guess, but this is based on legal precedent in the state of Michigan, is that anything you do by consent, if it's true consent, can actually happen. And their cases are, in my head, Rickner versus Frederick and Staple v. Staple, where the court's jurisdiction is limited except to the extent parties will grant them more jurisdiction than the court originally had by law.
I think this is not a matter of law. I think it's a matter of NCAA rules.
Right, but the principle remains the same. And I think the principle is if parties actually consent, and it is a true consent and not a coerced consent, I think they can probably do this. As we've pointed out, Doug McDermott did it at Creighton. On the other hand, he was a graduate student.
Well,
and so I don't know if that makes a difference.
Yeah, but if you consent to pay Hunter Dickinson $500,000 mm-hmm. from the athletic department budget, the NCAA is still going to say, no, you can't do that.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure.
If you're like, well, I consent to have 14 scholarships on my team this year, the NCAA is going to say, you can't do that.
Except the difference there is that's greater as opposed to lesser. In other words, you're consenting to take a lesser benefit, and as opposed
but it's
to
not,
a greater
it's not,
benefit.
It's not a matter of law. It's a matter of NCAA rules.
Well, you may well be right. I don't know. I'm purely speculating.
Yeah, but that's kind of the point, though, that we're all kind of speculating here, and mm-hmm. we're 8 months out from the season. We're speculating about one scholarship. I mean, the football team right now is two scholarships over the limit, and they're at 4 months away from the beginning of the season, and nobody thinks that the whole roster is going to be intact come the end of August. So there's no mm-hmm. reason to – I mean, we can think about it. We can say, okay, maybe they have, like, the spot open. I don't think any player on this team – is under the impression that they don't need a 6'6" defender who can shoot threes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, maybe Isaiah Barnes is like, wait a minute, that was my job. But like, if he hasn't stepped up and done it last year, then
you know, I think we and this is a mistake that is very common, applying what we think is logical to what they think is logical. And while it may be the case that they can use a Taryn Shannon, if I'm 6'6" and I think I'm about to move into a greater position on this team, Taryn Shannon coming in might make me think, wait a minute, man, you know, where are the extra minutes that I thought were going to be in store? Not to say that I don't want to compete, but the transfer portal offers you a really viable alternative, at least in the eyes of a lot of student athletes. I'm not saying that will happen at Michigan. I'm just saying it is something that you have to address with the current guys on your roster to make sure, you know, they're good. You still have an opportunity. We're going to battle this out, and we're going to make it happen. Hopefully you can convince them that that's the case.
Well, one thing's for sure. If Taryn Shannon pushes a guard out of the program, they got the same problem. They now still, you know, they're still short in the backcourt. Which is the problem right now with two point guards and Kobe Bufkin. That's it. Unless they can somehow create another guard out of this program, it isn't there. And so if Shannon pushes someone else out, they're stuck with the same problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. It comes down to interesting. Oh, sorry. I'm just saying it comes down to, like, you have to be, especially in the portal era, you have to be really honest with your players. And if they haven't been honest with them at this point, you know, it's a little late to start.
Well, I know when the Sam Sessoms talk, like, they hadn't even talked to Sam Sessoms. So when the Sam Sessoms thing came up, that was like, hey, man.
Didn't he end up transferring to, like, Morgan State or something?
Yeah, I don't know where he transferred.
State. He's going to Coppin State.
Like, Jawan had never talked to Sam Sessoms. You know, that had to be explained. Like, you do this is a report. It's not something, but you had to address it. And so that's kind of my point, is these portal dreams, and this one is more viable, there's a flip side to it that you have to consider as we're doing our sort of armchair GM or armchair coach and putting the roster together. What is going to be the other side of this is this maybe a part of someone other than a one of the draft guys deciding to leave the program? I think that is something to be very mindful of. And again, not throwing gasoline on Craig's flame Craig's comments specifically, but I know that this was a topic that they've had to address with guys on the roster already. So we will see. We'll see how it plays out. We will also see what you guys think of a couple of things on the other side of Brad Davison being awarded the Medal of Honor.
Brad Davison, Honor.
The Medal of Honor.
Yeah. For good sportsmanship?
Right. Well, it's the same with Craig. We'll get to that on the side. Jay Wright retiring.
Yeah.
Nick Saban saying, look, this is an unsustainable model. This NIL is going to be the death of college football. What's going on? So we got a lot to get to.
Clear on the radio.
So, Seth, what is the situation with football? Because Filianga and Stewart left this week, right?
Filianga left a while ago. Stewart wasn't even on the roster in spring. So, like, we're all reporting it because he put a thing out on Twitter, and I'm like,
okay,
this was known on the spring roster because he wasn't on the spring roster. Donovan Jeter, they were trying to get him back, and I think that ship has sailed over the last few days. He put something out on Instagram basically saying, like, not going to happen. I don't know if Sam knows more or whatever, but, like, that's, like, the latest movement. I mean, nobody other than Jeter who's been leaving has been, like, a, you know, a major, you know, the program's not losing anybody who's not playing. R.J. Moten. I always do this. I always get him.
Jordan
Morant. I always get the two New Jersey guys. Yeah, Morant. Unfortunately, I was going through the spring game film, and he made, like, his first great play in a Michigan uniform right after we learned he transferred. But, I mean, he was getting passed by true freshmen. So, like, this is going to happen every year. Michigan's actually had a lot less attrition than I think a lot of schools on their level. And especially even compared to themselves normally. Like, this has been a pretty stable offseason.
Where are they sitting on scholarship numbers? I had it at 86 or 7, but I wasn't sure.
I have them at 87 if you take Jeter out. 87. Yeah.
Okay.
With a couple of guys who I kind of already heard that they're going to not have at the end of the semester. Like, guys graduate and they stay on the team until they're done. So I think there's a couple more coming down the pipeline.
Okay. All right. You know, Michigan's hardly alone in basketball on this transfer portal stuff. Does it make sense for us to go through other schools? Will anyone be interested in that? I've got listings, you know, from everyone in the Big Ten, at least.
Yeah, I think to give some perspective to the times. Yeah, we can throw that in. I asked Brendan when we had him on, do you think that contributed to just the, I don't want to call it turmoil, just the different times we're in college basketball. Do you think that contributed to Jay Wright's decision? He seemed to think it did. That, you know, but from NIL to portal to the chaos that has ensued, relatively speaking, since the advent of those things, that Jay Wright was, his program was sort of basically immune to the impact, that, you know, they were going to be fine regardless. Whereas, you know, the Nick Sabans of the world are concerned about someone eating into their monopoly. Jay Wright, he's not swimming in those waters routinely anyway. The one and done's left.
Yeah. I mean, Saban doesn't want Texas A&M playing on a level playing field.
Right.
That's what Saban doesn't want.
I'm glad that he's mad at Texas A&M and not Michigan. Like, any situation that's going to make Nick Saban worried about Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher more than Jim Harbaugh is a big positive for us.
What? I'd rather that we had all the five stars and he was mad at us. Right?
Like, that's a good point, too. Their eyes been on us. Like, Kirby Smart, too. Like, there was that period where, like, 2016, 2017, where, like, it looked like they were gunning for us all the time. And I did not like being in their crosshairs.
Yeah.
Brian, you bring up a good point. I don't know how deep you guys want to get into this stuff, but the when baseball free agency started, one of the lawyers who was negotiating for the players at that point said that he thought they were going to end up with with 1-year contracts. And he's like, we offered it to them, put it on the table, and they didn't want that. They wanted the security of long-term contracts. And he said, that was great for us because the longer guys are, the larger the pool, the lower the value of players every year. So, like, I know they're freaking out now because everyone's got to change their roster construction. But if everybody's a free agent every year, you can go out and get the guy that you need for the price you have instead of having to, like, shop a small pool and try to, like, compete against everybody else for the same, you know, couple guys. So it may actually end up working out just fine. I'm not going to say, like, perfectly. Anyone who's good at what they're doing now is going to have to change their ways. But, I mean, ultimately, you're going to be able to find players that fit. You know, Terry Shannon's a perfect fit for Michigan. You need that.
So, fellas, before we went to the break, it caught our attention. How could it not? I mean, you would think I'm talking about Jay Wright. I'm talking about Brad Davidson. Dirty Brad Davidson. Getting awarded the Medal of Honor. Does that not tell you everything you need to know about Wisconsin, about Greg Gard? I just, again, not doesn't matter, a hill of beans in the grand scheme of things, because his college career is over, but galling to me that he got the Medal of Honor. What does that say to you about Wisconsin and Greg Gard?
Well, that's what I was going to say. What is it? I have no idea what the Medal of Honor is. Or is that something Wisconsin awards?
No, it's a Big Ten award, and you get one from each team, and they call it one male and one female from each school, excuse me, and they call it one of the most prestigious awards in the conference and in the country. And
it's why have I never heard of it?
And me neither.
Then you're not paying attention.
Can you name one Medal of Honor recipient in the history of Michigan sports?
No.
Okay. All right.
But I know it caught my attention that they gave one to Brad Davidson.
Well,
he's punching dudes in the junk. You kidding me? Routinely. Well,
that's their whole vibe. I mean, I guess be true to yourself, Wisconsin. Yeah, that's exactly who you are.
Yeah, man. It just reminds me of how, we had nothing to do. This wasn't our fault. This guy is over here. Yeah, let's go over and sing the song in front of Michigan. Anyway. All right. So,
well, one question, Sam. Who won it for Michigan?
I don't know. But I know who won it last year.
Don't even know who won it for Michigan.
Michigan will announce it this weekend or next weekend or 2 weekends at graduation. They do the athletic department wide graduation. But you've actually heard of a lot of Michigan's winners. Jake Butt won it on the men's side 1 year, and Carl Hagelin has won it.
Know the athletes. We just don't know the award.
They announce it every year in May when you're not paying attention.
Guys, last year's winner, easy one, football. Can you name him?
Well, I can, but
football.
But I know the answer. I've looked it up.
Okay. Yes. No, Adam Shibley.
Oh, that's right. I gave it to the guy who went to Notre Dame. He actually does some really good stuff.
I had no idea. I just know it certainly lessens or lowers the credibility of the award if you give it to Brad Davis.
Never heard of before.
Right. They should do away with the award if you're going to give it to Brad Davis. All right. So Jay Wright, guys, jaw was hit the floor when I saw this news. I think he is the best coach in basketball, college or pro. He's 60 years old. He's coming off a Final Four with a team that I don't think had really had any business in the Final Four. And yet he coached his squad to that point. He is at the top of his game. Mike Krzyzewski's 75 years old. So you figure if he coached that long, he'd get another couple of championships, and he's hanging them up. Does that surprise you as much as it seems to have surprised the rest of the sports world?
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that doesn't surprise me is the way he decided to go out. Coach K is like, all right, I'm retiring. Everybody's got to get their suit and tie on so I can get my ass beat by UNC. and Jay Wright's just like, all right, peace, guys. This isn't really about me. And that doesn't surprise me, but Jay Wright retiring at 60 does.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
I thought he was going to coach. As soon as I heard it said he's going to coach the Lakers, they said, no, he is retiring. He is hanging up, period. Wow.
I mean, there are people who retire at 80 because they stick around as long as they possibly can. And there are people who just I want to be done and do other things with my life now. Jay Wright, I mean, how many guys have we lost to in the playoffs who are like, yep, that guy deserves it?
I thought the same thing.
So, I mean, good for him. I hope Jay Wright has a very happy. I hope he has 30 years of enjoying whatever he's going to do next. And I don't know. Jay Wright's never been normal basketball coachy, so nothing surprises me that much. And okay, I mean, it's an opportunity to celebrate him. And like Brian says, he just made it not about himself. So one more thing to celebrate about the guy.
Yeah, I'm on the Jay Wright team too. I think we all are. And you can't say enough good about him, in my opinion, and at least in terms of the way he handles himself, the way his teams play, how he recruits. Everything about Jay Wright is probably what college basketball should look like. And unlike other people that have been mentioned on the show today, including Coach K. And I don't know what he's going to do. I have no idea what his plans are, but I just hope you know, he, whatever it is, it's something that makes his life more satisfying or satisfying. But yeah, yeah, he's,
it could be as simple, as basic as you said, Seth, that he just, you know, he wants to do other things with his life. But I, part of me does wonder if in his, you know, in his private moments, he's like, man, this is the sport. It's just, it's going to be tougher to sustain what I'm doing. This is the tone. This is the sentiment that is emanating from Tuscaloosa on the football side of things, from Clemson on the football side of things. Their coaches are complaining. They're screaming bloody murder, saying this is an unsustainable model. From the transfer portal to especially NIL, the college football, they're saying can't sustain this. Do you think that what we have seen, where we have gone with the transfer portal and where we're going with NIL, is going to disrupt the status quo in the way that Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney are suggesting it will?
Well, we're seeing a little bit of that with Texas A&M. I mean, they're clearly just complaining out of self-interest, but I do think that there is, they do have something of a point in that I don't think that the volume of transfers is great for my personal interest, I guess, in college football. I know it was untenable to have the sit out year remain because everybody is rightly pointing out the hypocrisy of the NCAA and all this stuff where coaches can move, but players can't, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But personally, I'm not a huge fan of this team. It has 17 transfers in their starting 22. So I know that they're coming from a place of self-interest, but I also kind of agree with them.
Yeah, you can understand from a coach's point of view how difficult and frustrating this all is. And, you know, I mean, look at, I think Minnesota right now in basketball has 5 players on their roster coming back from last year. And one of those isn't a certainty. And so they have either 4 or 5 kids coming back. And how is a coach, you know, so now the coach is not only recruiting high school kids, he's out there scouring the portal, figuring out whether the university will let these kids in at all, trying to figure out how to piece a team together in a coherent way. You know, I don't know how Ben Johnson, say, for example, does that. Even at Ohio State, you got, you know, he's got his nice freshman Branham. He's gone. He's to the NBA. You got Michi Johnson. He's in the portal. Kyle Young is gone. EJ Liddell, NBA. Justin Aaron's portal. I mean, that's 5 of your top 7 or 8 guys, 7 guys that are just gone. And I don't know if that's going to, you know, be, not that I'm feeling sorry for Chris Holtmann. On the other hand, you have to have some empathy towards coaches in the main and trying to do their job and put together a coherent team.
I want to draw a distinction between Jay Wright saying, man, this is going to be harder because I had my system, I had my niche, and his niche was actually beneficial for the sport and was beneficial for his players, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Versus Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney, who were taking advantage of a system because they could break rules that others could not, right? Right. And so anyone who's benefiting from corruption hates it when you shake things up because they've got a nice thing going. And they're going to scream bloody murder because you're breaking up their advantage that they shouldn't have had in the first place. I don't care about that. When you assess whether a system is good or not, you have to say, who is it benefiting? And what is it convincing people to do? I think where Brian has a really strong point is, you know, for fans, we don't like people moving around. Coaches, you know, it makes it hard for them to have guys moving around. For players themselves, part of the things the NCAA is supposed to be about, and I know we joke about it because it's so thrown to the side, is giving these guys an education. If you're moving between schools all the time just based off of roster depth every single year, you're really interrupting their educations, and overall, you're going to have less education being given to these players.
That can't happen because there is a one-time exception for a transfer. So the second time you transfer, you do have to sit out.
Sure, sure. But it's definitely opened up opportunities for people to move around more than they have in the past. I really liked, and I'm not saying like the system is wrong. I'm just saying they should have incentives in place and they should build incentives in if they want to address this to keep players in school or at least towards graduating. I loved that you could have graduate transfers. Like graduate transfers had greater opportunity to move than other players. And I think that they should maybe do away with the second transfer rule if you're doing a graduate transfer. Getting guys motivated to get their degree and getting schools motivated to get those players through their educations, I think was a great thing. I think that's the kind of incentive structure that you want in your system.
You know, someone gave this stat. It might have been you, Ira. They talked about how the majority of student athletes who are transferring from Power Five institutions wind up at a lower level, wind up in a group of five, wind up like in the MAC or Conference USA or something like that. I do think that there is a correction on the portal side of things that will come about. Is there any such correction, if you want to call it that, on the horizon for NIL? Because guys, I mean, and The Athletic just did an article on this. You got more institutions that are making a decision to go ahead and ask for forgiveness as opposed to permission. You got interpretation leaves a lot of latitude, right? To go and just do what you want to do and bank on the NCAA not doing anything to enforce what few rules they have on the docket. So is that the course? Does that violate a moral compass to say there is no real rule in place, no real rules in place governing this? You have other institutions really pushing the limits. There's not going to be a real consequence down the line. And if they tried to institute one, you could always say, hey, interpretation, should you be interpreting things more liberally now? I think that is a pressing question. And to me, it's really a question. I'm watching Notre Dame. I'm watching Notre Dame, and it's hard for me to see what they're doing on the recruiting trail and not attach some sort of NIL element to this. And I think there is one. I don't know for sure there is one. I'm not reporting there is one. I'm saying I think there is one. And if you're Michigan and Notre Dame is really pushing, if you find out they're really pushing an NIL initiative, you know, indirectly, does that not sort of change the equation a bit for you? I'm curious what you guys think about that.
I mean, I think that shouldn't change the equation for them, because it's just like they should be full speed ahead if they want to compete.
And understand what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the things that you can do. I feel like, look, officially, these institutions cannot solicit NIL deals for their student athletes. They cannot do that, right? That is like, of the few rules that are out there, you know, institutions can't do that. But is there an indirect relationship between institutions and some of these NIL deals that are happening elsewhere? Sure there is. Sure there is. So that's more of what I'm talking about. Do you think that there should be more a more liberal interpretation about what you should and shouldn't be doing?
Of course. Of course there should. I mean, Michigan's been looking at this all wrong from the get-go. Like, you look at the situation with Hunter Dickinson right now, and like Hunter Dickinson's deciding whether that's a guy who wants to go to the NBA, but everyone's like, well, you'll probably make more money with an NIL initiatives. Michigan's approach to this should be, let's show everybody this fact. Let's let everybody know that Michigan is going to make you more money than going the NBA route, unless you're like a top 10 draft pick. That should be our way of going into this.
Because the biggest farce out there, and it's a farce, that NIL is not supposed to be a recruiting inducement, but it is. It is a recruiting inducement. It's a recruiting inducement everywhere. I mean, there's the ideal, and then there's reality.
it's our economic system, people.
But the ideal here is like a fig leaf for the NCAA to pretend something. And since I'm not the NCAA, I don't have to pretend, right? Like, it's all legal, baby. Let's go.
Does that, and see, I'm like, it doesn't make me feel morally conflicted. I sense that there are some out there that feel that way. And I guess that for me is because I didn't think that there was this pristine sort of, this pristine sort of altruistic, pure intent that was present in the NCAA in the first place. I think it was corrupt to begin with, the model that was in place before. So, you know, blowing that up, There's no skin off my back, and I wonder if you guys had that view, or is your view just evolved, Greg?
Well, my view is the NCAA isn't going to do a damn thing about NIL almost regardless of what schools are doing, because it's impossible to enforce anything. And all schools need to say is, oh, I forgot, or I didn't understand, or any one of a thousand things, because no one's going to get hit on NIL. No one has to this point, and no one's gonna. And so the reality is, it's cowboy days. We're in cowboy days, and almost anything goes unless you're really stupid and really blatant about, as Brian mentioned earlier in the show, saying, oh, yeah, we'll raise XYZ dollars for you through the university. Okay, maybe at that point you get caught, but that's about what it's going to take, because everything else is going to be viewed as, well, isn't that what this all meant? And so that's where we're at. How this plays out with fans in particular, you know, I have some question. At some point...
I'll say this. I had a crystal ball in on a guy recently, and I was certain that this guy
for Michigan. No.
It wasn't a Michigan. It wasn't a guy going to Michigan. It was a crystal ball for a guy going to another institution. And I wasn't the only one that had my crystal ball. I mean, like we all had our crystal. This dude was going to this other school, and when his announcement came, the school that he picked. I mean, it was a shock that he shifted there. But it was a clear shift, and what I heard was I heard that this anonymous recruit, and it was a three-year NIL deal on the table. Three-year NIL deal for seven figures.
Three years, seven figures.
Can I prove that? No, but there was such a consensus about where he was going to go. And for everyone to be wrong, everyone wasn't wrong. There was something that happened in the 23rd hour that made that recruitment switch. What was it? I think maybe the numbers are inflated. That very well could be the case. But do I think there was an NIL recruiting inducement involved? I absolutely do. I absolutely buy that was the case.
Is anybody still functioning under the idea that NIL is not paying players? Paying players and NIL are the same exact thing. The NCAA, let's remember who they're serving, okay? The minute they make Mark Emmert from LSU the president, they were signaling exactly what they wanted to be. They don't care about, quote, cheating. What they care about is keeping the cost down. The cost of labor, they want to be cheap. They're the donor class who has to pay these NIL contracts who are supplying these millions of dollars. Their interest is not having to spend as much money as they, you know, they would much rather be paying, you know, $50,000 into the coffer than $200,000. NIL has blown it up so that it's going to be more expensive for them. They're concerned. They are going to be making a lot of noise about that. And Michigan just needs to recognize that that's what this is about. And I mean, if you're not playing the game right now, you're absolutely hamstringing yourself, and Michigan's already hamstrung by the fact that they have an admissions policy that does not allow credits to transfer from most institutions. That's going to be a huge deal in this era of open transfers. Michigan can't fix that. It's not like you can elect regents to change it, because they operate separately. There's a strong line there. The admissions office has to decide to make their own decisions. So Michigan's already got one hand tied behind their backs. They can't tie another one behind their backs, especially, like you said, if Notre Dame's doing it. I mean, we know Michigan State.
That was speculation on my part. So,
you can speculate, but I mean, let's be realistic. Everyone else they're competing with is doing it. We know Penn State's been at it. We know that Michigan State's been at it. We know Ohio State's been at it. Let's not kid ourselves that Michigan can stand by and not do it, and let's not kid ourselves that Michigan isn't doing it. Valiant Management Group is run by, you know, two former players, and, you know, a lot of the current players all went to Valiant Management Group. We're doing the same thing. Now, we don't have to say it out directly. You have to follow the rules, and the rules are in place for a fig leaf, but we just got to get better at it. We're just behind everybody else in instituting this and in going full hog.
So, Sam, Notre Dame's going to get Dante Moore and CJ Carr with no NIL deal in place. Is that what's going on?
So I think that, so my opinion, yeah. I definitely think that Notre Dame's out front for Dante Moore. If I had to pick a school that was leading for CJ, if I had to pick, I would say Notre Dame would be out front at the moment. Do I think that Notre Dame will get both of those guys? No. But do I think it's just because they're a better recruiting staff? And make no mistake, this is a much better recruiting staff than they had with Brian Kelly as the head coach. No question about it. But I don't think that alone is fueling the momentum that they have on the recruiting trail. And there has to be some accountability for them. This is why you want to drag these recruitments out if you're Michigan. I mean, get them to the season where they actually have to coach some games and see if they keep this momentum up. But in the here and now, between the pulling out all the stops on recruiting, the full staff recruiting effort, the just number of the sheer sort of recruiting prowess of the guys they have on staff, and what I speculate is, you know, some sort of NIL plan that they have there, the combination of those things really, really has them trending up. But about those two guys specifically, I think Tommy Reese is doing a fantastic job of recruiting those guys. And that, you know, that is something that Michigan is going to have to contend with on it, for both guys.
So we're rooting for Ohio State in the opener this year?
Absolutely.
So we're rooting for Ohio State to just kick the crap out of Notre Dame.
Yeah, are you actively rooting? No. Would you be okay with Ohio State beating the brakes off of Notre Dame? Absolutely. Absolutely you would be. So you know, we'll see. But I like I said, I've said this on the board, I've said this on the site. I don't think it's over for Dante. I think that Michigan has an opportunity here, and I think that opportunity to make up ground is really Jim Harbaugh taking the lead, because Tommy Reese can't match Jim Harbaugh as a quarterback guy, as played quarterback himself, first round draft pick, developed Andrew Luck, had Colin Kaepernick, you know, coached some guys, maybe not to be in first round draft picks, but coached some guys to be better here at Michigan. Nah. So that's your play if you're Michigan, and dragging this recruitment out. Hopefully into the season.
Is Tommy Reese going to get an offensive coordinator job somewhere soon? I mean, that guy's already been on people's lists. Like, how is he recruiting this well? He's not going to be there.
I hear you. All right, that'll do it for us today, folks. Great conversation as always with the MGO Blog crew. We'll see you three next week. The rest of you, we'll see you here tomorrow.